Welcome to episode 12 of Pandemic Preparedness here at biodefense.com. My name's Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and this chapter is about remaining calm. I've had a lot of people contact me ever since Ebola was found in Dallas, Texas, and now I guess 100 people are being monitored by the CDC. There's a lot of concern that this is spreading, or that even if this patient is controlled, then future patients, it could be spreading, and other people that are just flying right into the country, going right through customs, and then walking around major U.S. cities. There's a lot of concern, and I've never heard so many people in a state of fear about a pandemic before. I'm just hearing this from all kinds of vectors today. So I thought it would be important to really explain why we need to stay calm about this. But at the same time, we need to prepare. Now, this is crucial. The government likes to just operate in a state of denial. And that's how they try to achieve calm, is by keeping people uninformed and out of the loop. They say things like, well, we have it all under control. Yeah, sure you do. Well, why is it in Dallas then? Or they say things like, don't worry, it can't transmit through the air. It can only transmit through people who come into contact with each other's body fluids. Well, that's a lie. It spreads in close contact. Someone sneezes, there's a burst of viral particles that goes out 3 feet. Someone else inhales that, boom, they're infected. Someone drools on they're eating a sandwich. They're drooling on their hand. They touch a doorknob with their hand. That doorknob is contaminated. Someone else comes along, touches the same doorknob. They catch it. Now they're infected. So the government just tries to lie to you, thinking you're all so incredibly stupid that you won't figure out the truth. And that is their strategy. Well, I completely disagree with that strategy. My strategy is to say, let's be informed of the facts. Let's get educated. And let's get prepared. And by doing that, then we can remain calm because we know we have the knowledge, the skills, and some of the equipment that's needed to be able to handle the after effects of a pandemic outbreak. So that's the contrast between my approach, which is based on knowledge and empowering people, versus the government's strategy, which is based on thinking everyone is stupid and keeping them ignorant and basically following delusions and fairy tales. So, you know, these are two different tracks, two different approaches to how to get people prepared. But obviously, I think the approach of empowering people is a lot more effective. So let's talk about that. Why do we have reason to remain calm? Well, number one, if you've been listening to this course, you're ahead of the curve. You know more things about what is likely to happen in a pandemic outbreak than most other people. And hopefully you've been taking some of the steps that have been promoted in this course to get prepared with extra food supplies, water supplies, medical supplies, you know, latex gloves, isolation gowns, bodysuits, you know, the Tyvek type of bodysuits, plastic sheeting, anything that you would need to isolate a family member in your own home if they're infected, or anything that you would need to ride out a quarantine, a shelter-in-place government lockdown, which could be put in force at any time, anywhere in the United States. How are you going to ride that out? You're going to need some extra supplies. So hopefully you have been taking these steps. So that puts you ahead of the game, big time. Because most people are so far behind the curve, they can't even think about this. I had a family member call me earlier today. She said she was talking to someone at the bank about Ebola and the outbreak. And the person at the bank said, oh, I just can't even think about that. Because if I think about it, then I wouldn't know what to do. That was this person's explanation. And I found that very strange. That's like driving down the highway with your headlights off, hoping that you don't hit anything, and it's better not to see it because then you might have to process it. You know, you might have to deal with it. But some people have this attitude about pandemic preparedness, which is basically a delusional fairy tale attitude of denial, to say, well, it can't ever happen here. It can't happen to me. The government's going to keep me safe, blah, blah, blah. The vaccine companies will come up with a magical cure, and so on. And you are not that kind of person, obviously, because you're listening to this course. So you are way, way ahead of the curve. That's good news. That puts you in a strategically advantageous position to be able to survive not just the pandemic outbreak itself, but also the social, cultural, and commercial aftermath effects of a pandemic, which include, by the way, people being told to stay home, not being able to go to work, companies going out of business, going bankrupt, people not getting paychecks, grocery stores not having food on the shelves, and so on. So the sooner that you get on board with the knowledge, the skills, and even some of the preparedness that you need, then the more justification you have to remain calm, to be cool about it. So let's talk about those basics. Number one, can you survive a 21-day shelter-in-place quarantine? If you were told that you can't leave your home for 21 days, can you survive? Basic question. Survival 101, let's call it. Now, why is this important? Well, because a family in Dallas, Texas has already been ordered to do precisely that. They've been told that they have to shelter in place, they have to stay in their home, because their relative was the Duncan gentleman who was diagnosed with Ebola in the Dallas hospital. So the family members were told, don't leave the house for 21 days. We're going to keep you under observation for 21 days. Now, they were also told that they're going to have to give blood to the state whenever the state wants to draw their blood and check them for Ebola. They have to have their temperature taken twice a day, and they're not allowed to leave the house under threat of criminal prosecution. So if they do leave, and by the way, I've already read a news report that they did leave. They got sick of being locked up in their home in 3 days or whatever it was, and they already left and ran around town, even though they're probably all infected with Ebola. And why do we think they're infected with Ebola? Because they were in the same house with Duncan, and that house has never been sanitized or decontaminated. So the beds, the bed sheets, the dishes, the furniture, the doorknobs, everything in that house is probably covered with Ebola from Mr. Duncan, unfortunately. And the family members are surely exposed to this. So they're supposed to stay in their house for 21 days, which they refuse to do, and probably they're going to be arrested or thrown in a quarantine camp. You know, I mean, this is what it comes down to. This is happening right now. So the first thing is figure out, can you survive in your own home for 21 days? Now, you may be surprised to learn that most Americans really can't, especially if the water supply is cut off. They don't have water for 21 hours, much less 21 days. So you should have stored water on site for your entire family, enough water to last you 21 days. Now, how much water is that? At minimum, figure about 4 gallons per person per day. So every person is going to need about 80 gallons of water to survive 21 days. You better make it more like 100 gallons just to kind of round it up and have a little bit of water for showering, bathing. I mean, forget showering. I mean, just bathing with a sponge and a bucket is what I'm talking about. Which is enough to get by the way, in an emergency. So you better have 100 gallons of water per person to make it through 21 days, maybe up to 30 days of forced quarantine. You better have a month's supply of food. You better have a way to prepare that food. For a lot of foods, they're dehydrated, so you need water to rehydrate them. So storing food but not storing water doesn't make any sense, because who's going to run the water plant in a quarantine? Right? Okay. Maybe you say, well, the National Guard will run the water plant. Well, maybe they will. Probably they will. But what if they don't? What if they're busy with something else? What if there's some kind of looting or rioting or social chaos going on or something else that's a bigger problem is happening and they have to deal with that, and they turn off the water treatment center, or something goes wrong with it, or no one knows how to run the controls, or there's all the top guys who know how to run that thing, well, they're at home infected with Ebola. Who knows what the scenario could be? So don't count on having tap water. The way to get to a state of calm is to know, to have the confidence that you are prepared to handle this even if nothing else works in society, including electricity. So can you survive in your home for 21 days without electricity? So, of course, in a lot of households, electricity is used to heat water and cook meals. It's used to heat the house itself in the furnace. It's also used to run the air conditioning. It's used to run maybe perhaps water pumps or your garage door opener or all kinds of things that people normally depend on, even the communications gear, your radio, for example, your computers, obviously, running on electricity. So can you make it through 21 days with no food, no water, no electricity from the outside. If you can, then you have every reason to feel pretty calm about things, because in the worst case, if there's a big quarantine announced in your city, then, well, you just hole up. You bug in, as they say. You bug in to your house, and you survive on your food and your water and your non-electric equipment. Now, we can also, of course, talk about self-defense. That's a whole nother chapter. But in my opinion, you could feel even more calm if you also have the ability to defend your household against looters. Because one of the first things you'll see in a quarantine is, of course, a lack of food. This is happening in Sierra Leone right now. The food supply is crashing. Farms are being abandoned. The food, transportation, and commerce activities are imploding, being halted, in fact. And so there'll be food shortages. And then, of course, you'll have looters who are running around at night, because that's when it's easier to loot unseen. So they're running around at night, breaking into other people's homes to steal their food and their supplies. So every person who wants to make it through a scenario needs to also think about self-defense or, you know, basic security. How do you stop people from breaking into your windows or doors or going in through your garage door, for example? How do you do that? Just basic home security. But if you have all these things considered, then you really have a lot of justification for being calm about it. And this is even more the case if you have some gear that can help isolate you from Ebola if you have to go out, such as a full-face respirator or even a half-face respirator with, let's say, a good pair of goggles, laboratory goggles or medical goggles that can keep Ebola out of your eyes. And you've got latex gloves and you've got maybe a bodysuit, a Tyvek bodysuit or some kind of isolation gown or apron or something that can isolate you from the Ebola that is out there in the world. Now, you may think it's silly to have to walk out into the world wearing all of this gear, but believe me, if there is a pandemic that really spreads across North America, you're going to see lots of people walking around with this kind of gear. A face mask will be just the bare minimum. You're going to see people wearing latex gloves very frequently, having masks, full-face respirators, all kinds of things. It's going to become more common than you might think. And those people who are reluctant to wear these things, they will tend to disappear because, of course, they will die. They will be infected and die because these items do actually work. Latex gloves are Ebola-proof. The Ebola virus can't get through the latex or nitrile gloves either. So they are Ebola-proof. It's like wearing a bulletproof vest against Ebola. And that's why they use them in hospitals. So if you have this gear, it's a great reason to feel justified in a sense of calm and a sense of preparedness. It also means that you don't have to then depend on the government showing up and giving you these things. I can't imagine how terrible it would feel to be caught in a pandemic and to be in your home and realize you only have 5 days of food left. The quarantine is scheduled for 21 days or maybe even longer, depending on what the government wants to do. And you've only got 5 days of food. So now you got to depend on the government to deliver food to you for the next 20 days. Let's say if it's a 25-day quarantine. So you got to go out somewhere and stand in line with other people who might be infected, by the way, because you are in a quarantine zone. This is where the infection is spreading. Now you got to stand in line and maybe fight people for food. I don't know how orderly it's going to be. There might be people nudging in, you know, elbow to elbow, trying to get their hands on some of the food. Obviously, people are going to be desperate. So you don't want to be part of that scene, right? And the way to not be part of that scene is to get yourself your food supplies all squared away in advance. This is why a lot of people who are into preparedness, they've already got 6 months of food or a year of food. Some people have a couple of years of food or more. If you know any Mormons, you know what I'm talking about. They've got years worth of food already stored. They're going to be in great shape during any kind of a quarantine lockdown because they've already planned all this in advance. A little foresight, a little planning in advance can actually literally save your life in a pandemic outbreak. The people who are going to be most vulnerable to these disruptions are those who really never thought about any of this, who, you know, they're too busy watching daytime television or whatever they watch. I don't even know what people watch anymore, but they're glued to the television and they're not really thinking about survival. You know, the only time they go out is to go through the drive-thru pharmacy. And they're not really into preparedness and survival. Those are the people who are going to be the most vulnerable in a pandemic. So in summary, then, my first bit of advice in all of this is to give yourself actual good reasons to feel calm. And that means taking the steps to get prepared. Just do it step by step. You don't have to panic about it. You don't have to fret about it. You just start making a list. And it doesn't matter if the list is the perfect list. I don't know that there is such thing as a perfect list. I've never had a list. I've just started thinking about, well, what would I need? And go through that list or start writing down your own list and then acquire those supplies. And the other good news is that you have time to do that right now. You have time, because even if Ebola spreads like crazy across North America, that will take a lot of time. Remember, it's taken many, many months in Africa for it to spread from just a few people to several thousand people. So this progression, it might take years, actually, for this to spread. It might never spread at all, which is actually the outcome that we would hope to see. We would hope to see it's contained and never spreads. But if it does spread, it could take a long time. So you've got time if you start now and you commit to consistently enhancing your preparedness supplies. And how do you do that? Well, you divert money from the things that you're buying right now that are useless and that you don't need, such as that, what is that, grande, latte, Starbucks, I don't even know the terminology they use, venti, I don't even know. But a big Starbucks coffee, let's say, is $7. Well, that's the price of a full-body Tyvek isolation suit, $7. Actually, they're a little bit cheaper, $6. Some of them are $5-something. You can go on Amazon.com. You can buy Tyvek full-body suits right now for a few bucks, about the price of a Starbucks coffee. So you can start making decisions. Do I really want the Starbucks coffee today, or would I rather have an isolation suit that could save my life in a pandemic? It's your choice. Over time, some people will spend $10,000, $50,000, $100,000, $500,000 even on preparedness, depending on their level of discretionary income. But it doesn't matter what that number is. Getting the basics squared away can be done for just a few thousand dollars, you know, in basic supplies, basic food, water storage devices such as barrels or water bobs for your bathtub, or just empty milk cartons, you know, empty water containers. They're cheap. They're practically free. So if you start now and you pursue these plans with dedication, you can really build up your preparedness over time so that a year from now you could be in great shape, even if you're starting from scratch right now today. Now, the next real strong way to give yourself a sense of calm is to have a plan to get out, a bug out plan. You've probably heard this term before. Most of our readers are preppers to some degree. So they've heard bug out bags and bug out plans. It's just a plan to get out of Dodge, to get out of a high density population area. Now, the smart thing here, the smart play is that if you start to see Ebola spreading in across America, wherever you happen to be, if it gets close to you, or if cases start appearing in your city, you may want to start thinking about that bug out plan. And you've got time right now to think about where that plan would take you. You want to be in a place that is primarily low population density. But you also want to be in a place where you can have safety and security, shelter, obviously. So you need some kind of a structure. Could be a log cabin in the woods. Could be an underground missile silo that you bought on surplus from the United States Department of Defense. There are people that live in those. It could be something as just as simple as a mobile home, an RV, that you drive out of town with some supplies and you have a place to park it somewhere, maybe on a piece of property that belongs to a friend or relative of yours where you've got some safety and security, and you plan to live in that RV for 6 months. That's doable. I mean, they're not built for long-term living, but you can absolutely live in an RV for 6 months if you had to in a pandemic. Heck, some people live in them 24/7. So there are lots of ways to have a bug-out plan, but you got to make sure that you've got shelter and security wherever your destination is, and then you're going to either bring your supplies with you or have supplies there. And people who are really advanced in preparedness, they will have a network of friends and family, and they will have supplies pre-positioned at multiple locations so that there are options within the network of where you could go depending on what's happening. They might have one person out in the country, another person up high in the mountains somewhere, maybe people in a couple of different states. Maybe one person has a really good water supply and another person has a much better security situation. So you can kind of pick and choose where you want to go based on what's happening. So if you get out of the city in advance of the quarantine, then, well, you don't have to worry about the quarantine because they're not going to quarantine the entire country. They're only going to quarantine areas where it's beginning to really spread out of control. And you will have a bit of ability to see that coming in a city because the news will be announcing infections. Oh, today there's 5 people with Ebola. And then maybe a few days later, well, now there's 20 people with Ebola. And if you start to see that number go, you know, oh, it's 100 people within a month. And then a month later, there's 1,000 people. you should have already left by that time. I would say leave town before it gets into the multiple hundreds. That would be my personal advice. You can decide what number works for you. But keep this in mind, that when the quarantine comes down, the government won't announce it for the obvious reason that if they did pre-announce it, that would allow people to flee the area to avoid the quarantine, which would spread the disease, and that contradicts the whole point of the quarantine in the first place. So when the government does bring down a quarantine, a massive lockdown, it will happen without advance warning, without notice. It will be sudden. It will be just boom, the roads are cut off all at once, and you can't leave. So if you haven't left before that, then, well, now you're living in the quarantine zone, and you're going to have to bug in and ride it out. So what does this have to do with staying calm? Because you have the knowledge of some warning signs here, and you have time to prepare a bug-out location so that you can get out. And that should give you a sense of calm. Being able to know you've got an option. I mean, to me, that gives me a great sense of calm, knowing I've got options. Depending on what happens, you can adapt. You can change your plans based on the situation. And you have a secondary place to go where you've got some supplies. Now, would you have to abandon your primary home in order to do that? Yeah, sure you would. Would your home probably get completely looted and everything stolen out of it? Yeah, of course. Of course that's going to happen. You should write that off the minute you leave. Just kiss it goodbye. Goodbye, plasma television. Hey, goodbye, second family vehicle. We'll see you later. Just kiss it all goodbye and be thankful that you got out with your life. Now, if you happen to come back at a later date and there is something still there in your house of value, well, great. That's just a bonus. But what you're trying to do here is to protect your life, not to worry about the stuff in your house. Now, of course, if you have pets, obviously bring your pets because they're family members, right? So you want to have a bug out plan that includes your cat or your dogs or whatever the case may be, your lizard, your iguana. bring that iguana. He doesn't eat that much anyway. He's not going to really get into your food supplies. Not a big deal. So having a bug out plan is really, really a justification for feeling a sense of calm. Now, thirdly, here's another great reason to justifiably feel calm about this. And that is that in America today, you have access to an incredible assortment of immune boosting and immune supporting nutritional supplements, superfoods, products, garden seeds where you can grow your own herbs. And by the way, the herbs that you grow yourself are the most potent, so you should immediately be doing that anyway. You know, you can grow your own, oregano, mint, rosemary, all kinds of herbs, cilantro, all kinds of things that have antiviral properties. You should be growing those right now. And if you don't know how to grow them, start figuring out how to grow them. Because that could literally save your life. And you can grow these in containers. You can grow these in a small garden spot. You can grow them in a windowsill, a little bit of soil in a container in the window. They're pretty easy to grow. You can grow them on a balcony or a porch. So figure that out. Get going on that, and you'll probably have fun with it and improve your health at the same time. But even if you can't grow things, you can buy things. You can go online and you can buy superfoods. You can buy nutritional supplements. You know, there's been a lot of people buying colloidal silver lately, even though nobody knows if colloidal silver even works on Ebola. I don't know either. I have no idea. But people are buying it as a just-in-case situation. But colloidal silver obviously is a topical antiseptic type of substance. It does kill bacteria on surfaces. But does it work against a virus like Ebola? I have no idea. But people are buying that, and people are buying... I've been recommending Gaia herbs. I've been recommending Sambucus or Sambucol, which is a black elderberry extract that does have some antiviral properties against some strains, like the flu, for example, but we don't know if it works on Ebola. But you've got access, is my point. You've got access right now to an amazing assortment of potentially life-saving herbs. Antiviral properties are very common across the science of botany, the study of plants and plant medicine. Many of these have been identified and are used in the natural health arena or holistic healing arena. And there are some minerals that are also very beneficial for boosting immune function or supporting healthy immune function, such as zinc. And there are also some vitamins like vitamin D that are well known to help support healthy immune function as well. So there are a number of things that you can do right now, because I bet you can afford to go out and buy, you know, a bottle of vitamin D or an herbal supplement that, you know, a echinacea herb, for example. I'm pretty sure you could go out and buy that if you really wanted to. Now, the people in Africa don't have access to that. They don't have, you know, a Whole Foods store or a health food store down the street. They don't have Amazon.com rolling in with packages on their prime shipping. They don't have that. So you are in a situation where you have access to so much more than many other populations on the planet, that if you don't have a super strong immune system by the time this outbreak happens, you've got no excuse, believe me, because you have access right now. You've got the ability to acquire all kinds of foods, or if you can't afford them, grow your own. Dirt is cheap. It's dirt cheap, in fact, and seeds are cheap. Water is cheap. You can grow your own food. Sunlight is free. There's no excuse not to be growing some of your own medicine right now, given the situation that we are in. So by doing all those things, well, you're able to boost your sense of calm. You're able to relax a little bit because you're safer. You've got good protections. And yeah, you may not know if any of those herbs specifically work against Ebola, but chances are that if you have a healthy, strong immune system, you're going to be better off than someone who's got a compromised immune system, a suppressed immune system. And by the way, on that note, this might be a great time to try to get off some of your medications if you can safely transition off of those under the direction of a qualified naturopath. This is a good time to do that. Medications sap your nutrition. They take minerals and vitamins out of your body, and they also, well, they may not be available in a quarantine, so you don't want to quit them cold turkey because that can be dangerous. So it's better to start transitioning off now any of them that you can. This is a good time to really enhance your health. This is a good time to get off of that junk food if you're still eating any of it. You know, if you ever needed a reason to improve your diet, this is it. Ebola is on the march, and this is a good time to really think about holistic health, enhancing immune function, and getting away from all the things that compromise your immune function. I mean, that was the whole conversation here in episode 7 of this very course here on biodefense.com. So go back and review episode 7 if you want more about that, and review episode 6 if you want information on all of the antiviral plants and herbs and things that you can grow, things that are available in the natural world. And as you do that, you should be gaining confidence. You should be able to sleep better at night. You should be able to have a sense of calm and actually a sense of optimism about facing the future. Even if, regardless of the outcome of Ebola, if it spreads or doesn't spread, you should be able to face that with a sense of optimism, knowing that you've taken incredibly wise steps in advance to ride out the infection itself and also ride out possible quarantines and ride out the possible after effects of all of this, so that you can be around to help rebuild society. Because let's face it, there is going to be a society still remaining, and there's going to be a need to rebuild it, even if a pandemic does sweep through and kill, you know, 50% of the population. Well, there's still 50% here left remaining. So that 50% is going to have to rebuild, restore. And I want you to be part of that 50%. I absolutely plan to be part of that 50%. I think we could make a better society, actually, on the other side of some kind of big catastrophe or big awakening. If we lost half the human population, it would be tragic. But I wouldn't give up. I would say, let's pick up the pieces. Humanity will survive. We got to move forward. Let's make a better society. And in fact, let's have a better healthcare system that doesn't have a monopoly on just vaccines and drugs, and let's use all the medicine from all across the world that could prevent this kind of thing from happening in the future. One of the things that human civilization desperately needs is to end the medical cartel that has, in fact, given rise to these drug-resistant superbugs that are now threatening humankind in the first place. So there are a lot of opportunities, even after a collapse, to be able to contribute to the rebuilding of the progress of human society, to move us forward with perhaps a much improved society versus what we are living in today. So none of us would ever want Ebola to kill large numbers of people. Well, except a few scientists, I'm sure they've actually called for it. But the rest of us normal people, we don't want that to happen. We don't want human suffering out there. But we're also going to stay positive no matter what nature throws at us. No matter what the circumstances, we can rebuild. We can survive and we can move forward. And that is a healthy attitude. That is an attitude that honors life. And that is the attitude that you can legitimately justify when you've made the preparedness plans and you've taken the steps to ride this thing out. So that alone is enough reason to be able to live day to day with a sense of calm about understanding no matter what happens, you are prepared to move forward, to survive, to make it through, and to contribute to a better society. That's an invaluable attitude to have, and it's one that I live every day and that I share with you and invite you to embrace it at whatever time is good for you to do so. Now, what is pessimism with all of this? Let's talk about the flip side of all this for a second. You know, I've been laying out for you reasons for optimism, reasons for feeling calm and feeling prepared. But what's the opposite side of that? Where does panic come from? Panic comes from not knowing what to do. Panic comes from people who are uninformed. They're surprised by what's happening because they've never listened to a course like this that lays it out in advance. You know, much of what I predicted in this course has already come true. Someone texted me today and said, "Mike, you are a prophet." I'm like, no, this is not difficult to see this coming. But to some people, they're just amazed that someone else could see this in advance. But it's not difficult to see this coming. But to those who never saw it coming, obviously they're surprised, they're freaked out, and they haven't made preparedness plans either. So they're in a state of shell shock. You know, they're not sure what to do. They've never gone through these exercises, never even thought about this. So they become paralyzed often in terms of decision making. They become paralyzed, and then with the paralyzation comes pessimism and panic. It's the three P's: the paralyzation, pessimism, and panic. So avoiding those three P's is pretty easy, just like we've talked about, but a lot of people remain stuck in the three P's, and they feel helpless. And we have a word for people who are stuck in the three P's. The word is victims. And there are many people like that who really, just for whatever reason, they can't rise to having the internal courage to face possibilities. And so they would rather sort of cower in their own psyche and hope and wait for someone else to come along and save them. And they may get lucky. Someone else may save them. A family member who is prepared, perhaps. Maybe the government will come along and save them. There'll be that one lucky person that FEMA actually saved. You know, it could happen. But for those who really want to enhance their odds of surviving this and doing so in an awakened state where you can help contribute to the rebuilding after this all sweeps through, then you need to be informed and optimistic, and then you don't panic because you're calm. So knowledge is the way forward. Knowledge of what can happen, knowledge of how Ebola spreads, truthful information about that. The CDC is lying to you. They're saying it doesn't spread in the air at all. But of course, it does. If someone coughs in your direction, you can catch it. The CDC refuses to acknowledge that, so they're lying to you. That lack of knowledge causes people to be uninformed, causes them to panic. The CDC is actually contributing to the panic because it's contributing to ignorance. So knowledge empowers people. Knowledge creates calm because you understand what you need to do to be safe, to be protected. You understand you need a full face respirator, right? You can't just walk out there with an N95 mask and think you're bulletproof versus Ebola. It doesn't work that way. Ebola can get in through your eyeballs. It can get in through your nose. It can get in through your mouth. And an N95 mask, by the way, is a pretty crappy mask in the first place. I don't know why people still think these masks are so great. They're only 95% effective against the bird flu. The reason they're called N95 is because they filter out about 95% of the airborne particles. Well, Ebola, you know, there's enough Ebola in one drop of blood to infect about 500,000 people. So if you get 5% of one drop of Ebola, well, you're still infected. So an N95 mask, in my opinion, is almost useless as a defensive mask. You should be getting a full face or a half face respirator so that all the air you inhale is going through filters that can filter out viruses. So I guess I'm going to talk about that in another episode here. Some of the myths about the gear, that people don't really have the full story on a lot of this gear. And so they're buying things that aren't going to help them, or they have a false, they get a false sense of security with something like an N95 mask that really isn't that helpful. So I'm going to go over that in an upcoming episode. But the bottom line here is that knowledge can save your life, and in an outbreak, it very well may save your life. And so that's why, I'm so honored to be able to bring you this information, to share knowledge with you about how to protect yourself in a very dangerous world, a world that's made more dangerous by all of the disinformation and lies that are told out there by the government, which is delusional, by the mainstream media, which is failing to bring you the full story and is influenced by pharmaceutical interests, and of course by the CDC, which is nothing more than the marketing branch of the drug companies and the vaccine manufacturers. The CDC is only interested in promoting vaccines, far more interested in protecting the profits of Big Pharma than in protecting the health and safety of the American people. Make no mistake, the CDC is not about saving your life. It's about saving the reputation of the vaccine industry. And keep in mind that when you have this knowledge, you can protect yourself against all the layers that might threaten your safety in an outbreak. I mean, you have a medical system that is absolutely incompetent. A medical system that is such a failure that they can't even stop the spread of MRSA and superbugs that are now infecting hospitals all across the country, killing all kinds of people. I've had relatives that were killed by C. diff infections in hospitals. It's rampant, and the hospital operations are entirely incompetent. I mean, this guy from Liberia, he went to the hospital. He had fever. He had symptoms. He told the hospital staff he was from Liberia, you know, where Ebola is spreading like crazy. And the hospital staff, the doctor writes him a prescription for antibiotics and sends him home. It's unconscionable. It's as if they've all had lobotomies there at the hospital. You know, before you get a job here, you have to scoop out 80% of your brain just to work here. How do they not hear the word Liberia in the guy's explanation? Gee, he's got a fever. He's sweating. He just came from Liberia, and there's an Ebola outbreak in Liberia. Oh, let's write the guy some prescriptions and send him home. I mean, really? Seriously? So that is the hospital system that we have in America. And believe me, that level of outright stupidity and just unbelievable incompetence, it's everywhere across America. So you're going to have to fight against that if you want to survive. So it's a good idea to have your defenses in multiple layers. So to summarize this entire chapter here, you can justifiably have a sense of calm when you've addressed all these layers. And you are able to protect yourself against food shortages and water shortages or infrastructure disruptions or failures if a local quarantine is announced in your area. You are able to protect yourself, your home, with security and defense. You are able to protect yourself against incompetent doctors and nurses and a failed medical system that just seems totally negligent and will likely get more people killed than it will save. You are able to protect yourself by growing some of your own herbs, having some superfoods, having access to incredible antiviral plants and medicines that are widely available right now in Western society. So you can take these steps, but you can protect yourself, and that is why you can have a sense of optimism. That's why I'm optimistic. You don't hear me talking about, oh, this is so depressing. We're all going to die. No, that is not, that doesn't even enter my mind. This is what enters my mind is, let's help people get safe. Let's save as many people as we can, or give them the knowledge to save themselves. Let's hope and pray that this outbreak doesn't happen, because we don't want to see human suffering taking place. Let's get this under control. Let us keep our society safe. But if the worst case happens, we can still be optimistic, because we can rebuild. We can survive, we can make it through, and we can rebuild. And we might even be able to rebuild a better system that can prevent this kind of thing from happening again in the future. So technically, in this situation, I really am the ultimate optimist in this. I believe in the best outcome, regardless of what nature throws our way, regardless of what circumstances we encounter, we can still remain optimistic about making it through and rebuilding on the other side. So I hope this has given you some reason for optimism and calm. If you haven't taken the steps that I've mentioned in here so far, go ahead and get on top of that. Take those steps and you will find your sense of optimism increasing and building with each and every step that you take to get more and more prepared. It's as simple as that. And it doesn't matter where you start. You don't have to do it all at once. You don't have to do it all today. You don't have to buy everything you need this month and slap it on your credit card. No, you can do this incrementally, step by step. The important point is to start today, start with something that matters, and then move forward each day, doing a little bit more each day, get a little bit more prepared, have a little bit more knowledge, have a few more supplies. Do this day by day, and you will be in fantastic shape by the time this happens, the spread happens, if it happens at all. And if it doesn't happen, well, guess what? You have simultaneously prepared yourself against every other disaster in the world. You're prepared against a nuclear catastrophe. You're prepared against food disruptions, social chaos, riots. You've prepared yourself against an EMP weapon attack from a high altitude nuclear explosion, a nuclear weapon burst, you know, that takes out the power grid. You've prepared yourself against all these things too. So why not do it? You know, the greatest optimism of all comes from those who are well prepared against everything that the world might throw at them. Heck, you're prepared against an alien invasion of the species X from planet Z. I don't know, planet Zorg, whatever. You're prepared against an invasion of crossbow wielding Sasquatch animals marching across your front lawn. You're prepared against any imaginable scenario at that point, and that's a great sense of optimism. I'm obviously joking about this. I don't believe that Sasquatch is going to march into your yard, but you know that image though, crossbow wielding Sasquatches, isn't that Chewbacca from Star Wars? It's Chewie. Yeah, Chewie's actually coming for the Christmas party. That's what's happening. It wasn't an invasion after all. It was just coming to say hello. In any case, stay optimistic, stay on your path, stay on your plan, and you can survive this. You can survive almost anything. So stay tuned in to biodefense.com for more practical information to help you get prepared, help you get optimistic, and help you remain calm, because you have reason to be calm because you're prepared. That's what this is all about. Thanks for listening. My name is Mike Adams. I'm the Health Ranger. I'm the editor of naturalnews.com. And as always, feel free to share this information. Help others get prepared, because they might be a little bit behind the curve too. All right, take care.